Shas Illuminated presents the following shiur by Rabbi Levi Langer. Maseches Yevamos has been dedicated Le'iloi Nishmas Reb Moshe Yaakov ben Reb Nosson Yehuda and Reza Leia Bas Yaakov.
Maseches Yevamos, Daf Yud Gimel. The Gemara here is still in the middle of addressing the question we raised yesterday. Why is it that it's impossible l'halacha to find a young woman, a girl, who has been married midrabana with a kedusha ktana and then gives birth and subsequently be mamayin? Why is it impassable? So yesterday we brought down the opinion of Rav Safra, who says that the reason is because bonim hare hein kisimonim, which is to say that a young woman, a girl who gives birth, even if she has not yet had any simone, any shnei sairois, any simone godless, the etzem giving birth in and of itself, or the way Tosis learned, as we said the machloikis yesterday, Tosis learned it was the pregnancy, the ibor of the giving birth, that suffices to demonstrate that she is a gedoyla. It's just the equivalent of a simone godless, and therefore, once she continues to be married, and now she's a gedoyla, having given birth, because bonim harein kisimonim, therefore, it's impossible for her to be mamayin at this point, since her marriage becomes deraisa, since she's a gedoyla. That's how Rav Safra explained it yesterday. Rav Zvid today argues with Rav Safra, and he says, Rav Zvid Omar, ein bonim beloy simonim. In other words, he doesn't say that the bonim are the equivalent of simonim, the giving birth is the equivalent of having the sairois, but rather, Rav Zvid learns that it's impossible to have that she gave birth without having had the shnei sairois, and therefore the childbirth that she went through is a proof that she had had the shnei sairois on her guf. Frete Gemara v'nivdoik. Let us check out the guf, whether she has the sairois, and the Gemara says, well, it's possible that the sairois were there, but they fell off. And even if I normally hold that, loy chay shinan, shema noshru, we normally not chay sheish. Over here, we say that through the tsar leida, through the stress and the pain of the childbirth, perhaps the sairois came off. And therefore, the bedika does not help. That's the Gemara, Rav Safra, differing from Rav Zvid, a machloikas Rav Zvid and Rav Safra. The Mefarshim over here asked a very basic question. What is the machloikas and what's the difference ultimately between Rav Zvid and Rav Safra? This question is particularly shver, as is noted by a number of machavrim, given the fact that yesterday we said over from the Maharit that anyway the shnei sairois do not generate godless. It's not like having the two sairois is what generates, is what creates godless, but rather, as we quoted from the Maharit, the shnei sairois are only simonim, as Chazal called them simonim, which means that they're simply indicators, they're signposts, they're outside external indicators of the fact that the individual, the young boy or the young woman, has undergone the holistic, complete physical changes, the physical maturity of the body, which then is what engenders the godless, and really these sairois are just external indicators. And likewise, the Maharit said that the childbirth is the same thing. The childbirth is only an external indicator, a simon, which shows that the person, that the young woman, has gone through the holistic, total physical maturity changes in the body, which they are the godless. If that's the case, the Mefarshim asks, what's the difference of Zvid and Safra? They're both saying the same thing, given the fact that both Bonim and Sairois are apparently anyway only external signposts. What's the difference between saying, as Safra says, that the Bonim are the same as the Simonim, which means that this external indicator is as good as that one, or as Zvid saying that Ein Bonim Beloy Simonim, well, she had the childbirth, that's a raya that she must have had Simonim. The sairois. Anyway, the sairois are only an external indicator, so what's the point of saying that one external indicator, which is the childbirth, shows that she must have had a different external indicator, which is the sairois, which shows that she must be gedoyla? Why don't you just skip the step in the middle, the sairois, the bona being a sign and a raya that they were sairois, given the fact that the sairois themselves anyhow don't trigger the godless, they're only an external indicator, so that I might as well say that the bona themselves, the childbirth itself, is the sufficient external indicator? That's the question a number of Mechabrim ask. Rabbi Aaron Kotler, in the Mishnah of Aaron, answers this question simply by saying that Zvid holds that the raya of the bonim, of the childbirth, is a lot weaker than Rav Safra holds it to be. According to Rav Safra, the childbirth is a raya that's co-equal with the raya of sairois, and it's a complete raya gemura that the young woman has become a gedoyla. Now, Sheinkin, according to Rav Zvid, the bonim are a weaker raya, and as Rav Aaron points out, Tosfos holds, here on the top of the Amud that, according to Razvin, it's only a safek raya. The childbirth means that we are choishish. The likelihood is that she's a gedolah, but in fact she does not become a vadai. It's simply that since there is a likelihood that the childbirth has indicated that she has become a gedolah, therefore we don't allow her to be a mayan, to reject the marriage because of that great possibility that she has become a gedolah. But it's nothing more than a safek. Taisis writes that the Hemshech HaGemara actually bears this out, because after bringing this thing down, that the bonim means that there must have been some money, the Gemara says, hold on 1 second, says the Gemara, let's check out to find, check the guf, and find if there are Cyrus on the guf. And the Gemara says, well, maybe chayshin on shemanoshu, through the pain of the childbirth, maybe the Cyrus came off. So Rabbi Aaron says, first of all, Toysis says, why are we asking Vinivdoik? Let's check it out. If the Bonim would be a Raya Gemuru, the Charbus would be a complete Raya, that she's a Gedoyla. What's the need to check anything out? You have already a Raya for the childbirth. Secondly, the whole Maskonas Gemara, that the Gemara comes out, is that, well, Choyshashin, that they were Cyrus, but they were Noshu. Choyshashin, that we suspected, seems to imply that maybe that they were not, in fact, Cyrus. Well, if they weren't Cyrus, then it would come out that she's not even a Gedoyla. So therefore, all these things prove, says Toysis, that as Vid holds that the bonum is a weak raya, it just creates a possible likelihood that the woman is in fact a gedoyla and has the cyrus by means of the childbirth. But on the other hand, the childbirth could have existed according to his vid without necessarily having any real godless there. And the rabbin says, well, obviously according to that, that's the lashon of his vid ain bonim beloy simonim, with the lashon of lavdafka according to Taisis. It just means that the bonim generates quite a bit of a likelihood, a strong possibility that there was simonim. But really, simonim is the very strong raya, bonim is a weak raya, and that's what Razvid means to bring out by saying that if there were bonim, we have to go with that strong concern that there was the real raya of simonim. Rabbi Aaron points out, though, most Rishonim don't learn like Taisis, the Rajba, the Ritva, the Ramban that he brings down, all these Rishonim, they disagree with Taisis, and they all say that the ensuing Gemara is lavdafka when it says it's choyshishin, maybe there were two sires and came off. They say that Razvid meant positively, absolutely, that the bonim is a raya, that there was sires, and this young girl becomes a vada Gedoyla after having given birth. Why did it say in the Gemara, if so, that you should be boydek? Let's check it out. If, in fact, the Bonim are a Raya Gemura, that she's a Gedoyla, why bother checking if they're Cyrus? So the Ritva says, since the opportunity is available and it's readily accessible and easy to do, so therefore we felt that instead of relying on the Stam presumption that the childbirth is a Raya, that she's a Gedoyla, she'd become a Gedoyla, instead we should go with the Bedika of the Cyrus, which is readily available. As Dr. Baron Kotler, the Maisa, even according to this chat of the other Rishayim, it still seems clear that Razvid weakens the raya from the bonim. He doesn't hold it's a raya gemura in the way that a safra holds. Rather, according to Razvid, it just becomes a presumptive likelihood. In other words, that we would go with that chazaka, that assumption that if there was a childbirth, then she must presumably be a gedoyla. But obviously, it's not the biggest raya. And if the opportunity would exist, Dr. Baron, to boydeg, you see clearly from the gemara that we would boydeg if there was Cyrus. It just opportunity happens to not exist, because once she went through the childbirth, the gemara says that that childbirth could have taken away the Cyrus. The pain, the tsar leido could have removed the cyrus, so therefore don't bother checking. But conceptually, you see clearly that we would have been boydik if we could, because Razvid holds that childbirth is not a raya gemura, it's just a presumptive raya, there's a chazaka that we go with to assume that she's a gedoyla, according to the Ritva and the others, but it's not a raya gemura, not a complete raya, it's just something we presume. That's why, as you see, if we would be able to be boydik for cyrus, we would go with the bedika for the cyrus, because they are the strong Emes Hishtaka Raya, much stronger according to Razvid than the Raya from the Bonim. That's what Rabbi Aaron Kotler says. However, the Sefer Mereshes Moshe, Ahintik Sefer on Yevomis, writes that if you go with the simple poshet reading of the words of the Gemara, Razvid Omar Ein Bonim Beloy Simonim, the simple reading of this, Zokter, is Mashma, that simonim generate godless. They're not just a gilui milsa, they're not just an external indicator, like an indicator light. You see the cyrus, and it must be that she has gone through this holistic change in the guf, in the body, to make her a gedoyla. Rather, it seems that the pshat is that the shtei cyrus are the trigger that they cause a person to change from being a cotton into a godel. So, the first man, the Omar Reb Bafra held that the bonim could also be a trigger, that childbirth could also trigger and engender, turn her into a gedoyla. And Rizvit says, no, only Cyrus turn her into a gedoyla, but a childbirth is an external indicator that there must have been Cyrus as well, otherwise she wouldn't have been able to reach that point, the physical development, to be able to give birth. So according to that, you understand it very well, Zokhtem Reshes Moshe, Rizvit is saying that the Cyrus are the real generators, they create the godless status. Rizvit does not hold that bonim could create the godless status, but he says that if she had the childbirth, you have a raya, an external indicator that there must have been the Cyrus which trigger and engender, that they create the godless. And in fact, the Mereshes Moshe points out, and this is something which is already discussed at length by in the Chedusha Reuven Gazovsky, who discusses this Maramakom of the Shita and Betzes in Masechet Bava Basra Daf Nun Vav, that the Shita and Bava Basra Daf Nun Vav does in fact hold this way. A very interesting Shita of his that he holds that the Cyrus are that which create, that mamish, they create the godless. The Cyrus make the woman into a godel. Reb Reuven has a whole arichos on this, where he explains that the Maharit that we talked about yesterday argues on that. Maharit holds that what generates the godless is the holistic, complete, composite physical maturity that goes through the entirety of the guf. The external indicator of that happens to be that it generates Cyrus and you see it, but that's not what makes the godless. What makes the godless is the entirety of the changes, of the maturity changes that are taking place at this point in the guf. That's the Marit, as we said yesterday. However, according to the opinion of the Shin Kumbetses in Baba Basra, the Cyrus make the individual into a godel. The sheet is interesting. Maramokim in Masechta Baba Basra, Daf Nun Vav. It says there, the Mishnah over there, the sheet that brings at the Rajba, and others ask the Kasha, they ask like this. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Baba Basra that what happens if you want to know if an individual has two Cyrus and therefore became a Gedoyla, and you have two Adam on one of the Cyrus and two Adam on the other of the Cyrus. In other words, each Sar only had one set of two Adam, but there was no set that saw both of the Cyrus. So the Gemara says that that cannot be utilized to verify, to be made, that the individual in question is a Gedoyla, because of the fact that we have a din, al pishnayim Adam yokum davar, Dovor, Veloy, Chatzi Dovor. In other words, that the set of Adam, the Shneim Adam, have to be made on the entirety of the Dovor, of the thing that Ting testified upon, rather than being made on just half of it and have another cut, another set, be made on the other half. Dovor, Veloy, Chatzi Dovor. So therefore, you can't have different sets of Adam being made on different of the two Cyrus. Frekt of them, the Rishita between the Rajba and the other Rishayinim, L'chayr, there's a big steer to this, because earlier in the Gemara, in Baba Basra, the Gemara says that we know that there's a din that a person could bring a raya that a field belonged to him, that he has bought that field, from the fact that he ate Shnei Chazoka. And if he sat on the field for the 3 years and he consumed the crops for 3 years and nobody was moicha, nobody complained, then that's considered to be a raya that the individual is a buyer of the field and it's really his. That's the Shnei Chazokah. So the Gemara says that it could have one set of Adam being made on the eating consumption of the crop of the first year, second set being made in consumption of the crop the second year, and the third set for the third year. There's no problem. It works perfectly well. The older Rishonim ask, why don't we apply over there as well the din of Dovor Velechatzi Dovor? That's the kasha. Why is it that each one of the Cyrus is called a Chatzi Dovor, and you have to be made on both Cyrus with one cut, one set of Adam, whereas by the 3 years of the Chazaka, we don't say this, and we don't say that they're being made on one, and one, and one, the separate years, the different Kitois, is a problem of Chatzi Dovor. So the Shita brings in the Teretz from the other Rishayinim, the Rajba, they ask a question on that, the Rishayinim, the different possibilities and kashas, and the Shita Gobetzes over there brings down from the Sefer, Shita Loi Noida Mi Chibro. That's a parish on Masechet Baba Basra. Nobody knows who wrote it. And the Shita brings on this pshat from the Sefer Shita Lo Noida Michibra, that he says that there's a very big fundamental difference between the two cases. And the difference is that by the case of the Shnei Chazaka, the individual's bailus on the field certainly doesn't come about by means of the Shnei Chazaka. That's not what transfers the ownership. The ownership was transferred by means of whatever kenyan was utilized. It's just that the 3 years sitting on the field without any macha are a raya that the act of the acquisition that the Maisik Kenyan was done. They're only a raya. If they're only a raya, there's no problem whatsoever, Zokta Shita, to have different sets of Adam on different parts of the raya, because their raya doesn't go into the label of Dovor in the Torah, and we don't have the problem of Dovor, Velechatzi Dovor, because all it is a proof to something which, with some other thing which affected the transfer of the ownership, which is the Maisa Kinyan. Masha Ein Kain over here, by the case of the Shnei Cyrus, Zok the Shita, the Cyrus are themselves the godless. His Lashon is the Cyrus, Gabi Cyrus, be Yoson, Hu Ha Godless, the emergence of those two Cyrus, the heirs, they are the Godless. That's what we say, Dovor, Veloichatzi, Dovor. So there's Mamash of a Ferish Raya here, and this Shin Gombet says that he's making a distinction between the three Yezid Shnei Chazaka, which are only a proof, they're only an indicator, they don't embody the actual transfer of the Kenyan on the field. Mashain came in the case of the Cyrus do embody the actual changeover in status between the Katnos and the Godless, and the Cyrus themselves, they are with that which affects the change, and they make her a Gedoyla. That's the Shita's statement. That's why he says there and only there they have a problem of Dover v'lechatzi Dover. So it's a clear Raya, and Reuven is Meirich on this in the Chedusha of Reuven Simit Yitches, that the Marit, whereas the Marit held that the Shnei Cyrus are simply an external indicator of the real inner change, the change over the maturity that takes place in the Gufa Adam, which that's what makes the person a Gedol. Mashenke and the Shita held that the Cyrus themselves are given a koyach by the Torah to trigger the Godless in themselves. It's Oktam Reshes Moshe, that Shita would fit Meduyik, very stark Meduyik, precisely into the language of the Gemara, that according to Razvid, the Bonim, the childbirth, is not that which triggers the Godless, but Razvid said that the Bonim is a raya that there was Simonim, and that's important because the Simonim themselves, they are the trigger of the Godless, which is the Pshat of the Shita Gobet says, and fits well into the Gemara here. To complete this important discussion of what it is that actually triggers, that engenders the transformation into Godless, it's well worth saying over the end of the Truas Maharit as well, and what the Meforshim say about it. At the end of the Truas Maharit, he brings down a Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin Daf Samach Tes, and the Gemara over there demonstrates, and in the Doiros HaRishayim Havu Yaldi Bitmanya. The Gemara brings with Cheshboinois and certain incidents in the Tanakh, we see from certain stories and incidents in the Tanakh that in the early generations, it seems that maturity was reached earlier and they were able to give birth at the age of 8. And the Gemara makes this cheshbon and shows from some incidents in the Tanakh that they were able to give birth at 8 years old. Tosfos as a kasha and Daf Samach Tes Amud Aleph say, in other words, whereas today, like we see in the Gemara here, you have to be 12, or certainly you have to be a gedola to give birth. In those days, they were able to give birth already at 8. In fact, the Tosfos, the Gemara says earlier in the Perek, there in Sanhedrin, that the Gemara darshin from a pasuk earlier that if you have a katan who dies, a ger katan that dies, we do not have to be choishesh that they have any relatives at all. If the ger was a gadol, they might have had a son. If the ger is a katan, we do not have to be choishesh any chashash at all that they had any relatives. And the Gemara dashes this for a pasuk because a katan is too young to have a child. In fact, Taisis, what do you do with the Gemara later in the same parak that says there on some of Tesamid Beis that the earlier doiros, obviously the Torah is, was given at the time of the earlier doiros, the doiros of Rishayim, they gave birth, the young men, the women, the girls, the boys, they gave birth already at the age of 8, they could have a child. So mazetach, that you could be a katan and still have a child in the time of the doiros of Rishayim, that's Taisis Kasha. The Taisis answers that the earlier generations, when they have children earlier, the pshat is that they had the Cyrus earlier as well. The maturity in a holistic manner, a complete manner, was brought into being earlier on. What that which today takes 12 or 13, in those days you already had at the age of 8, there was a maturity with the Cyrus. And Zok Toysis, the Hod and Nosnu Chachom Shir, that this the Chazal gave us an evaluation, as Simon Luktana Bashtem Esrei, Ulogotten Ben Sholosh Esrei, that the Chazal tell us the numbers that you have to have 12 years for a ktana, and then the Cyrus are real, or 13 years for a boy, and then the Cyrus are real. That's Bederis Achroinim Nosnu Zasim, and that's only the later generations' evaluation that Chazal made for later generations. The earlier generations, they had Cyrus earlier, and they were real Cyrus, and they were real indicators of godless, and therefore the Pshat of the Gemara on some of Testament of Beis, that Bederis Rishonim were Moilet Betmanya, that they have children at the age of 8, is that Bederis Rishonim, they actually were able to become Gedoy them at the age of 8 as well. They could bring Cyrus, they could have children, and then Mamish could be Gedoy them at the age of 8, corresponding to that which today we have 12 and 13, is that there is a Rishonim earlier at the age of 8. Zokta Marit, you see the Feirish that these are all subjective indicators, and therefore, like he explained yesterday, that you don't necessarily need a Cyrus in an absolute sense, you don't necessarily need Shonim in an absolute sense, all these are simply external indicators, and like in our Gemara, the Bonim could replace the Cyrus, it could replace the Shonim, because that's a perfectly good external indicator. The emes is that Tosis is only a raya that Shonim is subjective. In the earlier generations, the Shonim was one cheshbon, there was the age of 8, and today it's 12, 13. The Tosis is actually not a raya that Cyrus is subjective, because Tosis actually does speak out of it there, that in the early times they used to bring Cyrus as well at the age of 8. The emes is that there are other Maramekomis in the Rishonim that appear to go back and forth on this issue. And there's an important Rashi in Masechta Ovois. There's a Rashi in Pirkei Ovois that's printed in the Vilna Shas in Masechta Ovois. So Rashi in Pirkei Ovois in Perek Hey Halacha Chaf Aleph, over there talks about Nechomesh LaMishnah and Echom LaMikra, Esel LaMishnah, etc. So it says over there in the Mishnah that Ben Yud Gimel LaMitzvois, that's Ben Shloishas for the Mitzvois, it's one of the numbers that's given over there. So at the age of 13, that's when a boy is of a mitzvah, and he becomes a godlin, is chayef and mitzvahs. So Rashi over there goes through the shaila, how do you know the number is 13 years old? Mechtesi, what's the mocker, the sunnas, that a number is 13, that you become a bar mitzvah, a chayef and mitzvahs at 13. So Rashi over there brings two pshatim. The first shot in Rashi is that he makes a cheshbon, a calculation, that Levi, who was younger than Shimon, the two brothers, Shimon and Levi, they are the brothers who wiped out and killed at the city of Shechem, and Levi was the younger of them, and when it comes out that Levi was 13 years old at the time that Shimon and Levi killed the entire city of Shechem. Since the Pasuk says over there, Vayikhu Shnei Ben Yankiv, Shimon Velevi Ish Charboi, so it says Ish Charboi, that Shimon and even Levi, who was younger, they were both called Ish. Each Ish took his sword, and we know that Ish is a godel. So therefore, it comes out that you see from there that the age of 13 is the earliest age in the whole Tanakh that we find anywhere that a person should be called a godel. Actually, all this question this raya, the Tshuvas Maharil, and Siman Nun Aleph, the Tainus on the raya, that in the Chanami, you see from there that you could be a Godel at the age of 13. But what you don't see is that it should be impossible to become a Godel at an early age as well. Maybe you could be a Godel before 13. You just don't happen to have any stories in Tanakh that refer to anyone at the age of 12 or 11 or 10 that they did something and they should be called an Ish. So there's really no raya that 13 is the minimum age. That's the Maharil's Tainu. Evidently, Rashi was going according to this Mahalach, according to his first Mahalach, that if that's the earliest place in the Torah, so that, and the Torah called Levi an Ish, so that itself is the indicator that that's the earliest time a person could be an Ish, a person could be a Godel. That's Rashi's first shot. Rashi's second shot over there in Masechta Ovos by Ben Shloish Esrei Le Mitzvahs, he says that we know that Sairois are an indicator that a person is a Godel, the Shnei Sairois, the hairs, and Zok Rashi Chazal was Shiru Chachomim, Chazal evaluated and they figured it out, net, the minimum age at which Cyrus could be substantive and could be real would be the 13 years for the boy and the 12 for the girl. So since Chazal was share that it's a Shir Chum, an assessment that they made, so therefore that's how we know that the minimum age for Bar Mitzvah is 12 and 13 respectively. That's what Rashi says. If you think about it, really it emerges from these two pshatim that obviously, just to go backwards for a moment, according to Rashi's second pshat, the age of 13 is quite clearly subjective. It does not appear that Rashi held in the second Mahalach that the age of 13 was given me Sinai. But he does say that the Cyrus was given me Sinai. That's what he says. That me Sinai we gave, that Cyrus are an indicator of godless. But how do you know the number? Is that Rashi is actually a Meduyik, that comes from Hashorah of Chazal. Shiru Chachomim, that the substantive emergence of the Cyrus would emerge at the age of 13 or 12 respectively. So that clearly seems to be a subjective thing and could really change B'meshach HaDoyrois one way or the other. However, according to Rashi's first shot, it really cannot change. Rashi's first shot is saying that we're learning it out of Levi. Obviously, Levi was from the Deris HaRishonim and still was saying that even then, apparently, the age for godless was 13. It's absolute given, and given it's not a subjective thing, it's a given, and you see that going in the Mara Mokum, and the Raya from Levi, who was obviously Deris HaRishonim quite early on in history, and still already in his time it seems that godless was reached at the age of 13, which really not like the Tosfos that says that Deris HaRishonim had godless earlier. Likewise, there's a Tshuvas HaRosh, a very important Tshuvas HaRosh in Klal Tesvov Siman Aleph, where the Rosh in response to the Shoyal goes through a whole bunch of stages, ages in life, which are Halacha Mishnah Sinai, Ben Gimel Shana Labia, that Bia is a real Ma'is of Tashmish with a young girl once she's at the age of Gimel Shana, 3 years, and other ages as well that the Rosh says, these are all Halacha Mishnah Sinai, they're clear-cut mysterious from Sinai, the same thing with the age of 13, the mitzvahs, Dr. Rosh, that is Halacha Mishnah Sinai. The Rosh says that clearly, so obviously the Rosh is clearly not going, that it's a Hashorah of Chazal, that Chazal evaluated on their own, determined that that's maturity comes, but rather that the Rosh is saying that age itself, the age of 13 or presumably 12 for a girl, these are all active traditions of Sinai, Aloch Mashma Sinai, and they were given specifically those ages. So these are Mar Mekoymis. The Rosh clearly is, again, not like the Tosfos and Sanhedrin, and he's clearly is going that even no matter what day you're in, it takes 13, it takes 12, and you have to absolutely be that age to be a Godel. And in Mele, it's going to come out, according to the Rosh, that there is a Rishayim, when they gave birth early, they would not necessarily become Gedolim at that time because they were lacking the Shonim. Like Tosfos Havamin over there, they were missing the Shonim, they were missing the right requisite number of years, You can't be a gadol. And the I lemaisa, the Gemara, it's a takashver. I mean, the Gemara says that they gave birth at that time. I Tosis asked that it seems from the Gemara earlier that you can't have a young boy who's a cotton and has a child. So the truth is, there's a round over there in Sanhedrin that says that you could say that Gemara means al piruba de ruba. The vast majority likelihood is most likely that no kid, no boy, less than the age of a mitzvah, is possible for him to have a child. But if tzeftzach, on rare occasion, you could have a deris rishonim, the Iran says it was something of a reality. Today we might never have it. In the earlier generations, once in a blue moon, on a rare occasion, you could have a cotton that we murdered from the age of 8. That doesn't impact on the earlier Gemara, which is talking about according to normal presumptions. So the presumptive normal assumption that we go with is that any kid is assumed to not have had any children, even though it's a Rishonim that was the assumption, and that's the Gemara means on Amud Aleph when it says over the Sanhedrin that if a kid dies, a ger, we could assume that he left no relatives at all. Let's move on to the next sugya, an important sugya on Daf Yud Gimel, the Machloikis, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, about whether an Erva Asher's Tzorah, of course we've been going till now with Beis Hillel, that he holds the Erva does Asher's Tzorah. Beis Shammai disagrees, they hold Beis Shammai hold that Erva does not Asher's Tzorah. We'll make some comments on this Machloikis between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The Gemara tells us, on Amud Beis, that what underlies Beis Shammai's Shita, that an Erva does not Asher's Tzorah, the Gemara says, because Beis Shammai understood that is one of two possible scenarios here. Either the woman was an Eishas Ach first and afterwards became an Achois Isha second, which is to say what? That this woman was married to Reuven before her sister married Shimon. So therefore it comes out that this woman was Mesiaches, she related to Shimon first as an Eishas Ach, and only afterwards did she have the additional relationship, the Erva upon Shimon, once her sister married Shimon, and afterwards she became an Achois Isha. In that scenario, since we have a din of Enes Achal Adeser, so the Achois Isha is not even Chal, and therefore it's impossible for the Achois Isha to answer the Torah. That's Beis Shammai. What about the opposite scenario, in which the sister married Shimon first, and then this woman married Reuven, the brother Reuven? So in that case, the woman was Nisyaches to Shimon as an Achois Ishtoi first, that was the first label that she had, was Achois Ishtoi, and afterwards she became an Eishasach when she married Reuven. So over there, we have the reverse problem, which is that although she relates to Shimon as an Achois Ishtoi, she is not, in fact, an Eishasach Klapei Shimon, and if since you're not an Eishasach Klapei Shimon, so you're lacking the fundamental nature of the relationship, it's supposed to generate the Zika L'Yibum. That's called an Eishasach Shaloi B'Mokam Mitzvah, because the din Isor of Eishasach is not even Chal, does not even take effect, since we're talking that the Achois Ishto was Chal first. So that's Beis Shammai, two distinct ideas, in other words, why Erva doesn't patur at Tzora, either because either Achois Ishto doesn't take effect, or B, because the Eshazach doesn't take effect, and therefore it's called Shaloi B'Mokoyim Mitzvah. What in turn is the Shita of Beis Hillel then? Right? What do they do with these tainas? So the Meiri over here speaks out that the reason why Beis Hillel disagrees is because Beis Hillel holds that even though there's a din of Ein Yisur Chal Iser, that's only to get a punishment, that's to get a Malkus. But as far as the fundamental Isur coming in, kicking in fact, there are two Isurim, and the second is it does take effect upon the first. The din of Einis Achal Isur only means when it gets to Anshim. Zokt the Meiri, so that explains very well why Bishol does hold that the second Isur is Chal, and the woman is an Achois Ishtai and an Eishasach, both, no matter which one came first. And that's why, according to Bishol, she's an Erva and she's an Eishasach, and she could pat at the Tzorah. The Stipler and the Kilos Yankiv write that this Meiri is actually a strong proof, a strong support for the Tshuvas Achiezer, Reb Chaim Oizer, who actually says this clearly in explaining how a sugya the Machlokes b'Shem Beis Hillel. The Achiezer actually goes further and says explicitly that he understands that the Machlokes b'Shem Beis Hillel actually depends upon this very question of what the Einis Achal Lisser does. I mean, that's the din of Einis Achal Lisser. Once you have one Lisser, in effect, the second Lisser can't kick in. Is it the Pshat that the second Issa doesn't exist as an Isur at all, and there's only one prohibition, the one that came first, and not the one that came second? Or do we say the second one does kick in also as well? It's just it's not strong enough to generate onshim, to generate punishments. So he says, Chaim Oizer says that that's the machlokes over here. Beis Shammai hold the second Issa isn't triggered at all. Beis Hillel hold the second Issa is triggered. It's just not strong enough for onshim. But Akoponim, since she's both an Eishasach and a Chayseshtai, therefore the Tzorah is a true Tzorah's Erva, and she gets nefteres. Rav Chaim Moshe points out a very curious thing in the Gemara Daf Lamed Gimel. The Gemara says that even though we hold a nisachal iser, once one iser takes effect in a particular scenario, the second doesn't. Despite that, says the Gemara, there's still a nafgemina lekoivroi bein rishoyin gemurim. In other words, that a person who does an act of an isur, which another iser took effect on it, was but blocked from being actively chal, we still say that this person who is considered to have done a dual aveir rather than just a single aveir, we bring a different cemetery among the multiple aveir doers. That's called the koivroi bein rishoyin gemurim. So you see clearly, it's a very remarkable thing in the Gemara. Apparently, even on the one hand, we say, anus so the second iser doesn't take effect. And the other hand, we're saying that imamish makes an impact and it's a big difference in which cemetery you'll bury. It's considered a more severe aveira. How do you reconcile all this? Chaim Moshe says, well, the way I'm explaining in Beis Hillel, which is how we go, that the halacha is going to be that the second iser will take effect. It's just that there's enough gemina that you don't have active punishment for the second iser, but it is a bigger aveira. It's a double iser type aveira activity, and therefore it makes sense to Gemara l'koivroi bein rishayin gemurim. So, this is the shita of the Achiezer, that even when you have an Isur Chalal Isur, we would still say that the second Isur does kick in, it's effective, just doesn't generate Anshim. Other Achrenim hold this way as well. However, the Koivetz Ha'orois, which is interesting, that Rabbi Chonon Vassaman, the author of the Koivetz Ha'orois, was actually a shvogar, a brother-in-law of the Achiezer, Rabbi Chaim Moshe, and here he takes a different tack. The Koivetz Ha'orois raises exactly the same question. By the din of Ein Isur Chalal Isur, is the second Isur effective, which is the Mashmoy Sagamora, as he concedes, of the Koivet Ben Rishoyin Gemurim? Smasha, the second Isser, does kick in, it just doesn't generate Onshim. Or should I learn that Einus Achal Isser means that the Isser is not effective at all? The Koivet Sa'oris claims that there's a strong raya to the second tzad, that Einus Achal Isser means that the second Isser doesn't even take effect. He brings a raya from a Rambam in a Peish HaMashnayos from a Sechta Krisus, and the Rambam says a vort over there, which he refers to as the Nekuda HaNefloh, and people say over this Rambam, the Rambam is Nekuda Nefloh, his wondrous Nekuda that he was Oymed on. The Rambam over there says as follows, just briefly, in a Peish HaMashnayos on Krisus. Over there, the halacha is mavur in the sugya, increases, that the din of basar b'cholov, that if you cook meat and milk together, then you generate a new issa called basar b'cholov, that din doesn't take effect if the meat was originally usser with an existing issa before it was cooked with the milk. For example, let's say it was an avela, so it had not been kosher shechted, so it was usser als nevela, or alternatively it was chaylev, it was forbidden fat, and it was also issa deraisa of chaylev. So in those cases, if I cook it with milk, I don't get a new chalois issa of Basav Achalav because of the fact that it's Ein Isur Chalal Isur, and it can't be Chal the Basav Achalav because it already was Nevela or Chalav. Fractav then, the Perish Mishnah saw Rambam, since we know that Chazal tell us with different droshes in the Gemara that the din of Isur Basav Achalav is Isur Deraisa, not only on eating but even being Nene, even getting any benefit from it. So therefore, Kumtoi says the Rambam that L'choyer, the Isur Basav Achalav is Moisif on top of the Isur, or previous Isur of Nevela, or the previous Isur of Chalav. That's the word of Isur Moisif. It's more collective, holistic. Is there a greater Isser that encompasses more? And then we say Isser Moisef tells us that the second Isser is Chal on the first. It's a Klal and Shas. So over here, since Basav Chalav is Asav Hano, it's more all-encompassing than the original Isser Chalav or Nevela, which is not Asav Hano. And what do you say that the Isser is Moisef? And Nevela, just like it's Asser in Hano, Al's Basav Chalav, it should even be Chal and take effect even with regard to the Isser Achila. You should have an Isser Achila as well, a Basav Chalav, because of the Isser Moisef. This is where the Rambam comes up with his Nekuda HaNefloa, his wondrous Nekuda, where the Rambam says over there that the Isser of Hanoah and Basav Acholov need to be triggered by a pre-existing Isser Achila. Once you have the Isser Achila, so then that triggers the next step in turn, which makes it even Asav Hanoah. That Rambam says the Rambam, if you understand it that way, the question falls away. Because I have to ask the Kshayla here, is something that's already Asav Achila, already Asav Nevela, could it get the Isser Achila of Basav Acholov? That's the whole Shayla. The question is not whether Isser Hanoah or Basav Acholov, because that doesn't come into play at all until the Isser Achila already was Chal. So if the whole question is, if the Isra Achila is going to kick in the boss of a Cholov, the answer to that is going to have to be no, because it already was pre-existing Osir, Al-Tzchaylev, or Nevela. Only after I finished being done on the Isra Achila, boss of a Cholov, and I decided that it was Chal, only after then could you take it to the next step and say that it's going to have the Isra Hanoi as well. This is the Nekuda and the flaw of the Ramanus. Fract of them, the Rebbe Chonon, in the Kwebet Sa'or, it's a very, very simple, basic question. Fract of Rebbe Chonon, what emerges clearly here from the Rambam, is that if I cook chaylev on a vela in milk, the resulting product does not have any isur hanoa. It didn't become asab hanoa because the chaloy is a boss of chalav wasn't chal, and therefore it didn't become asab hanoa. Frekta b'chana, why not? If I'm going to learn like others learn, like we showed that we said that Reb Chaim Oizer learns this way, then in fact in isur halisa doesn't even mean that the second isur doesn't take effect. It simply means that it doesn't take effect in the strong oifen, in the strong way to be able to generate onshim, punishments. So over here, at least the second isur does take effect. The isur basav b'cholav will kick in on top of the chaylev on the vela, and once it kicks in, it will be able to trigger the next step, which is to trigger the isur hanoah also, the additional isur hanoah. So frek the kovitz ha'oros, what's the problem? You know, I'm going to learn that the isur halisa doesn't preclude the second isur taking effect. So over here, the basav b'cholav should take effect, and then it should generate the next step, which is to answer the Osah Hano, the boss of Bechol. So that's Bechon's Raya. He brings from here a starker Raya that Enos Achalissa means that the second Isra is not effective at all. And since over here, the Isra of Bechol of Achila wasn't effective at all, therefore it didn't generate the next step, which should answer the Isra Hano of boss of Bechol. The Bechon claims, interestingly, that even though we have the Gemara later, that's on the Lamed Beis, the Gemara says that there's an Afgemin Lekoivroi Ben Yerushalayim Gemurim. He argues that that Gemara is not a Raya, that the second Isra actually took effect, that it was chal, and they have two active existing isurim here. Zot Rav Chanan, even if there's only one isur, but you will have what we call in the yeshivas the shem isur of the second isur, which is to say, a waiting in the wings isur of the second one, and the rotzen hatoyah would really be that that is a sibot to aser, and it's a cause to aser, and we would aser, if not for the fact that it already has an existing isur. So that itself, if a person would do that activity, which has the existing isser plus the waiting in the wings isser, the sivas isser, that's more chomer and more severe than doing an ordinary maisa avera, a single maisa avera. And therefore, Rav Chanan claims that we could understand the Gemara of why I'm going to bury this fellow in the Rishon Gemurim cemetery plot, even if I don't learn that the second isser is actively chal, because the fact that it's a shem isser, a label of an isser, and waiting in the wings to be chal, if not for being blocked, that itself makes the maisa of doing this chet a more severe. The Achronim here in the Sugya grapple with an additional question. They ask, one of the elements of Bishamay's Cheshbon over here is that if the woman was an Achoyis Ishtoi first and then subsequently married Ruvain and became an Eish Esach, so therefore the Isser Eish Esach does not take effect, it's not Chal, because it ain't a Chal Isser, and therefore she's not even an Eish Esach, so she is the equivalent of an Ephila, which is a Loi B'Mokam Mitzvah, and therefore she's Loi B'Mokam Mitzvah, she's not going to pater her Tzorah. So that's why if the Eish Esach was Chal second, it doesn't pater the Tzorah. The Achronim, many Achronim ask over here that the Gemara seems a little illogical, because granted that the Isser of Eish Esach wasn't Chal, why did that necessarily mean that the falling Legibim was Kol Shaloi B'Mokam Mitzvah altogether, as if she never was an Eish Esach? It's just a question of Isor that can't be Chal. The Isor Eish Esach isn't Chal. But obviously, this woman who's now falling before Shimon, she obviously was previously married to dead brother Reuven. There's no doubt that she was married. It's true that that didn't generate an Isser Eish Esach Klapi Shimon, but the marriage existed, that the marriage existed to Reuven, and now she's falling from Reuven. That should be called Mokam Mitzvah, and let her pater the Tzorah. Why in the world should I say that it's now called Mokam Mitzvah unless she was not only married to Reuven, but she also had an additional concept of being Nesar Machmas, the marriage of Reuven, to give her the label of Eish Esach with relevance to Shimon? What do I need that for? Why is it sufficient to call it Mokam Mitzvah and pater the Tzorah and everything just by virtue of having been married to Reuven? So Reb Shimon Shkop answers this question by saying an interesting and curious thing. Reb Shimon learns that in order for a woman to be viewed as a nofelis liyibum, and someone as a candidate, so to speak, to be mamshich, the marriage with the ishus, with the yibum, the hokam la'ochim shem, we have to see this isha at the moment of the nefila, Zatav Shimon Shkop, as a woman who carries with her, within her, the marriage to Reuven. So says like, while she was married to Reuven, while Reuven was alive, so obviously the ishus was existing betokfoy between her and Reuven. She was an ishus Reuven because they were married. But now the Reuven is deceased, so the din misabal is manatek the ishus. That's the din if the Reuven die, so now she's no longer married to him. So how do I see this woman with the ishus of the Reuven still continuing, some remnant of the ishus still continuing within her, that she'd have a mitzvah to mamshich the ishus by being mesia bemes with Shimon? It's zokt of them Reb Shimon Shkop that that's where this concept comes in of the Ishus to Reuven continuing insofar that it continues to generate an Isur Erevo Klapi Shimon of Eshesach. An interesting thing. Zachter Shimon Shkop. In other words, even though the marriage has vanished with God to all of the Dinim, and she's no longer Eshesach Ish, and if somebody is Boalel, he won't get Skila, or Esam Isa Bezin, she's not an Eshesach Ish anymore. But Afal P. Kane, there is episode remnant of the Ishus to Reuven. In what element does that remnant still exist? And the answer is because she still remains a label of Eshesach to ask her actively to any of the brothers. Situation, and there the woman never gets the label of Eshesach. So there, granted that Kozman, that Reuven's alive, of course she's married to Reuven. But now that Reuven is deceased, that he's dead, so the marriage to Reuven now vanishes into thin air, and since the Yisr Eshesach didn't kick in, there's nothing to continue the Shem Eshes Reuven. Klapi the brothers, and the male, that's not called a matzav of being Mofelosli Gibbim, so consequently, it won't patter the Tzorah. That's the answer of Rav Shimon Shkop. And the Hainu that we're Mechadish, according to Rav Shimon, that in order for a woman to be considered Nofelos Liyubim to Shimon, it's insufficient that she had in the past been viewed as an Eshes Reuven, a wife of his brother. We need to see her in the existing present as someone who carries with her the Eshes of Reuven, and that can only be if she carries with her the Shem of Eshesach to answer her to Shimon with an Isser Erev of Eshesach. That would be considered a continuer of the marriage. Otherwise, she doesn't continue the marriage in any way after the death of Reuven kicks in as menatik the marriage, and that's what Bishama is saying, that if the Eshesach came second and it wasn't Chal, so with the death of Reuven, I look at this woman as being Shalei B'Mokoyim Mitzvah.
In light of the Machlokes Bishama and Bishil regarding Tzoras Erva and how they actually acted each according to their own shita, halacha l'maisa, the Gemara starts the sugya of Leisa Skaidudo. Rish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan, how is it possible to have different times for Kriyas HaMegillah? The Bnei Kfarim, the villagers, Lein Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, or Yud Aleph, the Bnei Ayorais, Lein only Yud Aleph, and the Bnei Krachim, Lein only on Tesvav. Rabbi Yochanan seemingly challenges Rish Lakish's assertion that there is an Isra of Leisus Gaidudum. Say it's for not making wounds upon oneself after a mace. And Rish Lakish says, we learn both halachas, also the Isra of Agudais Agudais, and also the Isra that one cannot make a wound on himself when there is a mace. And it says Leisa Skaidudu, it doesn't say Leisa Gudu. Now, the Rashba understands in Daf Yudalad that Rabbi Yochanan really disagrees with Rish Lakish and does not hold there's an Isra Bechlal of Leisa Skaidudu, Shleyasu Agudu Sagudais. The Ritva, however, explains that, of course, Rabbi Yochanan doesn't really argue. All the kashas that he asks in the Sugya is a way to get to the truth. Even Bavar, what's the real halacha? But of course, he's moida to Rish Lakish that there is an Isra of Leisus Gaidudu, that they should not act part of Klal Yisrael according to one Shita and part of Klal Yisrael according to the other Shita. We'll see soon, Moment Bezer Hashem, that there really is a Machlekes for Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish and Lamdus, and there are several Nafkaminas Lahalach. What's the reason for the Isra of Leisus Gaidudu? Rashi says several times in the sugya that the reason of the Isra is shleiroek based tayris. It shouldn't look like there are two tayris chas v'shalom. If part of Klal Yisrael acts one way and part of Klal Yisrael acts another way, it looks chalila like there's two different tayris. The Rashba writes the same. The Ritva agrees. However, the Rambam in Perek Yud Beis Mehilchas Avodah Zarah writes a different reason. The Rambam writes that it's forbidden for different factions to act differently in halacha because dover ze goyimu machlokes gedayla. When there are two different factions in Klal Yisrael acting differently in any particular halacha, it can create a tremendous machlokes. The Keren Oyeru writes that really this machlokes Rashi and the Rambam, what the reason of the Isra of Lois is going to do, is really this machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan, how could some people lay in the Megillah on Yud Aleph, some lay on Yud Dalet, and some lay on Tesvav? And Rabbi Yochanan answered, towards the end of the sugya, if they're doing it in two separate places, it's really not a problem. What's the reason for that machlokes? Rish Lakish holds that the Isra is Shalei Yiroa Kebeis Teiris. It shouldn't look like there are two Teiris Chas V'Shalom. Therefore, it won't make a difference if the two factions are acting differently, even in two places. Because Shalei Yiroa Kebeis Teiris doesn't make a difference whether it's in one place or two. However, Rabbi Yochanan learns the Isra is not because Shalei Yiroa Kebeis Teiris. The Isra of Lois is going to do, the reason the Torah asked her that, is because we shouldn't come to Machlokes. If some people in one town act according to one Shita, and people in a different town act according to a different Shita, they're not going to come to Machlokes. Nobody necessarily knows what the other one's doing. There's no reason to be Chayshus, there's going to be a Machlokes. In the same light, the Karenator explains why Rabbi Yochanan holds that the fact that some people have the minig not to do Melach on Erev Pesach, and some people have the minig to do Melach on Erev Pesach, is a riot that there's no Israelites going to do, while Rish Lakish answered, Min Hoga Shaini, a minig is different. That's also Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish Lashitasa. Rabbi Yochanan holds the Isra is because of Machlokes. If the chashash is that they'll come to Machlokes, it would make no difference whether it's a minig or an actual Isra. Ma'ashenkein Rish Lakish holds the Isra of Lois Hiskoydu, as we mentioned before, is not because of Machlokes. The reason is because it shouldn't seem that there are two Torahs Chas V'Shalom. If that's the case, that's only Shayach, that only makes sense if we're talking about an actual Isra. If we're talking about a minig, there's not going to be any chashash that someone will think there are two Torahs. If it's just a minig, there is no chashash of Shlo Yiroke based Torahs, and therefore Rish Lakish says that minhaga shayni, that there is no chashash by a minig of Lois Hiskoydu. According to the Karen Oyer's explanation, we can have a clearer understanding of the Ramah in Orach Chaim Siman Tov Tzadik Gimel. There are more paskins that everyone knows there's an Isra for people to take haircuts during Sfiras HaOmer. Some people have the minig from Pesach till Lag BaOmer. Some people have the minig from Rosh Chodesh Iyar till a few days before Shavuos. The Ramah says that there cannot be one group keeping the first part of Sfira and another group keeping the second part of Sfira in one town, because it's a chashash of Lois Hiskoydu. Now the Magen Avraham asks on the Ramah, L'chayra in the sugya, we saw that the Gemara says in Minig, there is no chashash of Lois Hiskoydu. So why is the Ramah concerned about the Isra of taking haircuts during Sfira Salimer? That's only Minig, that's not an Isra. So why does the Ramah say that there's an Isra of Lois Hiskoydu for different groups in the same city to have different minhagim as far as taking haircuts during the Sfira? Now the Magen Avraham himself says that at the end of the sugi where the Gemara said Mekoyim is shiny, that in different places there's no Lois Hiskoydu, the Magen Avraham understands that the Gemara was Chayzer. The Gemara retracted from the Svara that it said before that there's a difference between Minag and Isser, and there is no difference. There is an Isra of Lois Hiskoydu whether we're talking about Isser or even if we're talking about Minig. And the answer to the Kasha from the Isra of doing the Minig, of not doing Malacha, Erev Pesach, is Mekoyim Hashayni. Some places do have such a Minig, some places don't have such a Minig, and if they're in two different places, there's no Isra of Lois Hiskoydu. That's how the Magen Avraham explains the Ramah. But according to the Karen Oira that we mentioned, we can explain it even a bit better, that it's only Shitas Rish Lakish that Minig does not have any relevance to the Isser of Lysis Gaididu. Because Rish Lakish holds the Isser Shlei Ra ke Beis Tairis. And by Minig, there's no Chash that it'll look like Beis Tairis. However, according to Rabbi Yechanan, where the Isser of Lysis Gaididu is because of Chash Machlaikis, Chash Machlaikis is applicable even by a Minig. Therefore, there are more Paskins according to Rabbi Yechanan. The halach is like Rabbi Yechanan against Rish Lakish. And therefore, it's Shaykh, the Isser of Lysis Gaididu, even by Minig. Hence, there are more Paskins that they cannot have two different Minhagim in one town, even regarding the Minig of not cutting one's hair during Sphira. And that really is the intention of what the Magen Avraham says, that at the end of the Sugya, there is no difference between Minig and Isser, just whether it's in two places or one. Like we said from the Keren Ayra, if it's a halach of Shlei Roka based Tairais, so then, as far as Minig is concerned, there won't be any Isser of Lysis Gaididu, but it won't make a difference if it's in one place or two places. There's still Chash of Shlei Roka based Tairais. However, if the reason, the rationale of the Isser of Lysis Gaididu is because it shouldn't come to Machlaikis, so Legabe Minig, it is Shaykh, the Isser of Lysis Gaididu, they still may come to Machlaikis if there are two factions in the same town doing different menhagim. However, if it's in two different places, there's no chashash to come to a fight because one doesn't know about the other. Now, regarding the etzem ha'iser of Lysis Gaididu, when we read the pashtus of the sugya, it's mashma that it's an iser d'oraisa. And that's also the pashtus of the mashmos and the Rambam in Perek Yud Beis of Hilchas Avodah Zarah. And you see the Kesef Mishnah also asks Akasha, why does one get Malkus for making a wound on themselves if there's a mace? L'chayru it's a lav shebechlalos. Because there's an Isser also of Lysis Gaididu Shlei also Agudis Hagudis. And the klal is on lav shebechlalos, there is no Malkus. So you see that the Kesef Mishnah understood that the Isser is an Isser d'oraisa. The Steichemed in Mareches Ois Lamed, Ois Ayin Ches, brings also the Shitas Ha'aramid Rabbonon and Shitas HaPrima Godin in Eshel Avram Sim Tov Tzadik Gimel Sif Kotten Vov, that the Isser of Lysis Gaididu is an Isser D'oraisa. However, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, it's Mashma from the Rambam that it's only in Asmachta. And same as the Shitas HaRe'im in Parshas Re'eh, there's a prichodosh like that in Nimukim al Rambam. If one wants to see all the different shitas, take a look in Steichemed that we mentioned on Mareches Ois Lamed Ois Ayin Ches. Now that's clear that in Lysis Gaididu there's written the Isser of what, making a wound on oneself out of tsar for having a mace. Tosfos asks the kasha. How could Rabbi Akiva hit himself so much when Rabbi Elazar was nifter till he was bleeding, as the Gemara relates in Masechta Sanhedrin, L'chayr he was over an Isser of Lysis Gaididu, that one may not wound themselves out of tsar for a mace. Tosfos answers two terutzim. First terutz is that it wasn't derech srita. He didn't scratch himself, he just banged himself, he hit himself. The Torah only answers if one does it in a manner of scratching. Tosfos' second teretz is that when Rabbi Akiva did it, he did it for Kavod HaTorah. He didn't do it on Tsar for the mace. He did it out of Tsar for the Kavod HaTorah that Rabbi Elazar was nifter. That's not awesome. However, the Aruch Haner asks, we understand why he wasn't over the Isser of Lysis Gaididu. But there's still an Isser of Chavolo Ba'atzmon. Shitas Rabbi Akiva and Mesechtas Baba Kama in the 8th parak is that one may not wound themselves. It's an Isser for one to be Chavol Ba'atzmon, for one to wound themselves. How could Rabbi Akiva hit himself, even if there's no Isser of Lysis Gaididu, because of it wasn't Derech Shrita, or Taisa's second heritage it was for Kovod HaTorah, there's still an Isser for one to be Chavol Ba'atzmon. The Rahlaner answers that the Isra of Chavola Ba'atzma is because of Bal Tashchis, because he's ruining his body. Just like we find in Masechtas HaVeidazara Daf Yud Aleph, that one may be Oiker, Ala Malachim, it says. One can cut off the feet of a behema to show tsar for the ptira of a melech. If a melech died, it's mutter, and I guess it's even commendable to destroy the feet of a behema, to be mishtatif in the tsar, to show kavod that the melech was nifter, and there's no isra bal tashchis. The same reasoning applies to hurting oneself for kavod atayra. That there's no isra bal tashchis because he's doing it because of kavod atayra. However, the Aruch Lener himself says we really can give another teres to Taisus Kasha. The Aruch Lener is medayik from the lashon of the Gemara in Sanhedrin and the lashon of the Avos Reb Nosson that also relates the story of Rabbi Akiva. The Rabbi Akiva was hitting himself and he didn't realize that he was bleeding. He did not intend to let blood. He was hitting himself out of pain, but he did not know that he was bleeding. The moment Rabbi Akiva noticed that he was causing himself to bleed, that he was being chayvul in himself, he stopped. And the Aruch Lener says that's similar to the story in Masechta Shabbos, the famous story about Rava, that he was learning and there was blood coming out of his hands. It wasn't that he made himself bleed. It was unintentional. And when he realized he was bleeding, he stopped. Now the Shulchan Aruch in Yeridei Simen Kuf Pei Sif Zayin brings two shittas. If it's mutter for one to do gdida, to make themselves bleed on a mace, if it's without scratching, if it's just by hitting oneself. First shita in the Shulchan Aruch is that it's asur only if one scratches himself. Derech HaKol is mutter, the way Taisus answers in his first heretz. And the second shita the Mechaber brings, it's asur even if he hits himself and not scratching. The Shach over there writes that if it's for Kovod HaTorah and it's not Derech Srita, it's just hitting himself, not in a manner of scratching, that's for sure mutter, because that includes both Terutzim of Taisvis. It's also not Derech HaSrita, it's Derech HaKah, and it's also for Kovod HaTorah, it's not Al Tzar HaMeis. For that reason, the Shach says it's mutter for one to bang themselves, to hit themselves for Kovod HaTorah, even though blood may flow, because it's not Derech Srita, and if you're Choshish for Taisvah's second Teretz, it's for Kovod HaTorah. So therefore, there's no Isser. The Aruch Lener says, according to his Teretz, that it's done only unintentionally. That's where Rabbi Akiva was matter. But otherwise, if it was intentional, it's Osir, even for Kovod HaTorah, even not Derech Srita, it will be Osir, and therefore he argues on the Shach. Now, the Menachas Chinuch HaMitzvah Tov Samach Zayin brings, there's a machloikist beisoysef in the Bach, that it says in Masechta Makos, v'seret lo nefesh l'sitnu b'b'sarachem, that one gets malkus only if they're soirate, if they do gdida, they scratch themselves till they bleed, for tsar, on a mace. What if it's for another reason? If one lost a lot of money, Svinosa Shetova Bayam, his boat drowned, and if one scratches themselves till they bleed, is there malchus for that? The Gemara says, Mufurish, there's no malchus. It has to be only Viseret Lanefesh. It has to be doing it on Tzara Meis. Is it Mutter Lekatchila for one to do that to himself, to wound himself till he bleed, if it's not for a mace? The Beis Yosef says it's Mutter. There's no Isser at all. The Bach says, of course it's Osir. He just doesn't get malchus. But it's definitely Osir. And the Bach explains that the Rebbe Lezer scratched himself till he was bleeding, that's in Yoni Olam Haba. In Yoni Olam Haba, there's no Isser at all. But in Yoni Olam Haza, it's Osir Lekatchila. The Beis Yosef does not hold of this distinction, and therefore the Beis Yosef says it's Mutter Lekatchila for anything other than for a mace. The Chacham Tzvi, however, asers, even if there's no Isser of Loisus Goydru, there's an Isser of Chayvul Ba'atzmai that we mentioned before, that one may not make a chavolo wound in themselves because it's similar to Bal Tashchis. Now, if one takes a look in the Numen Chas Chinuchs, the Magia on Bottom asked, according to the Chacham Tzvi, how is it mutter for Rabbi Akiva to be chayvel in himself? Even if there's no Isra of Loisus Gai to do, there's still an Isra of Chavola Ba'atzmai. And as we mentioned before, the Aruch Laner says that's not a kasha, because if it's for Kavod HaTorah, it's no different than the halacha of Eikar Al HaMalachim, that one may destroy the feet of an animal, Mishum Kavod HaMelech, the same way there's no Isser of Chavola Ba'atzmai because of Kavod HaTorah. Therefore, there's no Baal Tashkos in such a case. Now, Rish Lakish asked the kasha to Rabbi Yechon at the beginning of the sugya. How can there be a halacha that some people lay in the Megillah Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, Bnei Ayorois lay in the Megillah on Yud Dalet, the Bnei Krochim, HaMukafos Chayma, lay in the Megillah on Tesvav? It should be an Isra of Loisus Gaidru, Loisei Asu, Agudais, Agudais. Now Rashi, when he explains the Gemara's Kasha, explains that the Kasha is from all three groups, from the Bnei Kfarim, from the villagers that lay in Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, or Yud Dalet, from the Bnei Ayores that lay in Yud Dalet only, and from the Bnei Krochim that lay in Antesvav only. Now, when Rabbi Yechonon challenges Rish Lakish from the halacha of not doing Meloch on Erev Pesach, that there are some places that do Meloch on Erev Pesach and some places don't do Meloch on Erev Pesach, Rish Lakish countered, I'm talking about Isurim. By Isurim it's Shayach Loisus Gaidu. By Minig, of course, there's no Loisus Gaidu. Now Rashi explains, B'divra Maschel, Amin Alcha Ano, that the Kasha is from Bnei Yudalad, that lane only on Yudalad. The Bnei Yor is lane only on Yudalad. And the Bnei Krochim lane only on Tesvav. And it looks like two Tyrus. In that Rashi, it's mashma, that the whole kasha is from Bnei Ayorois and Bnei Krochim, from people who lend you Dalet and people who lend Tesvav. It's not mashma that the Gemara is asking from people who are villagers, that they lend you to Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. Rashi, at the beginning of the sugya, however, explains that the kasha is from the villagers also, that lend you to Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel, and the people from the Ayorois, the people who live in the cities, lend Afgan Yud Dalet. It seems Rashi was chayzer. He retracted his first explanation. Now, in this later point in the sugya, explains the kasha only from the Bnei Yudalad and Bnei Yud Tesvav. He doesn't ask the kasha from the villagers that lay down Yudalad, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. Now, the Rashba at the end of the sugya explained the kasha from the beginning was only from Bnei Ayores, the lay down Yudalad, and Bnei Krochim, the lay down Tesvav. There was never a kasha from the villagers that lay in on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. And the reason being is that the Bnei Kfarim, the villagers, who lay on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel, are not a different type of Megillah laning, that they have their time of Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel, and the people from the cities, from the big cities, lay Yud Aleph. The people from the villages also are really considered Bnei Ayores, that their Iker time to lane is definitely Yud Aleph. There's just a kula that Chazal will make for them because they're mesapik mayim u'mozen lachem shebekrochen, because they bring food and water to the people in the cities. Chazal will make and say that they can lain on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. But of course, that's not considered agudos agudos, that there are two distinct times to lain Megillah. However, Bnei Yudalid, people in the cities who lain on Yudalid Adar, and the people who lain on Tesvav, those are two distinct times, two distinct groups. From that halacha, that there are some that lay on Yud Dalet and some that lay on Tesvav, that's definitely a kasha. But from the villagers that have the opportunity to lay on Yud Dalet, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel, that doesn't make agudis agudis. That's a kula in the halacha of Yud Dalet. And the Rashba explains, it doesn't look like two tereis. There's no agudis agudis. Since some years they lay in Yud Aleph, and some years they lay in Yud Beis, and last year they lent Yud Gimel, so people realize it's just a kula, and it's not shaykh to come to a chash of Yeroa Kebeis Tairis. L'chayra, it's possible to explain that there's no stira in Rashi, that Rashi didn't retract. And I saw the Nitziv, in the Chuvus Meshev Dover, 7 Yud Zayin, explains that Rashi was not chozer from his original explanation of the kasha. The original kasha in the Gemara was also from the fact that we find that villagers lain on Yudalef Yudbeis and Yudgimel, and Bnei Ayorois lain on Yudalef, and Bnei Krochem lain on Tesva. What happened was, Rabbi Yochanan asked the kasha to Rish Lakish, I'm going to show you a Mishnah in Pesachim that we do find. Some places have a minig not to do Melach on Erev Pesach, and some places have a minig to do Melach on Erev Pesach. To that, Rish Lakish answered, yeah, of course. As far as minig is concerned, there's no Isser of Laisis Goydudu. The Isser of Laisis Goydudu is only applicable to an Isser Gomor, and not by a minig. At that point, Rashi explains, so the kasha is only from Bnei Yudalit and Bnei Tesvav. It's Osir from Bnei Yudalit to lay on Tesvav. It's Osir for Bnei Tesvav to lay on Yudalit. That villagers can lay on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel, although they're acting differently than people from the cities that lay on Yudalit, but that is only the same category as a minig. It's not that it's Osir and there's two different dinim. It's comparable to the same halacha of minig. They can, if they'd like to, lay on Yud Dalet. They have a minig that they could lay on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. Anything that's a kula, the way the Rashba explained, that there's no separate din of Bnei Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. It's just the halacha that they could be mekel on the halacha of Yud Dalet, but it's not two distinct halachas. It's not two distinct factions. They're a subcategory in the faction of Bnei Yudalit. If that's the case, so it's comparable to Minig, that it's not two real distinct factions. Some have a Minig like that, some have a Minig like that, but it's not going to cause that it should be near a Kebeis Tyres. At this point in the sugi, where Rish Lakish already explained to us the difference between Minig and Isser, that there is a clear distinction by Isser, there is Laisis Gaidudu, and by Minig there is no Laisis Gaidudu, so the Kasha from Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel falls away. The Halacha that villagers can lay on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel doesn't have the same strength, doesn't have the same Taikif as Halacha of an Isser. It's comparable to the category of a Minig. They may lay Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. They don't have to. It's not an Isser for them to lay on Yud Dalet. It's only a subcategory in the halacha of Bnei Yud Dalet. Therefore, it's not to be considered an Isser. At that point, in the sugya, the kasha falls away from Bnei Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. Just as the Rashba explained, it's not really a kasha. It's just a kula in Bnei Yud Dalet. However, in the beginning of the sugya, that we were not aware of the distinction between Minig and Isser, at that point, the kasha was that the fact is we see some people lay on Yud Aleph and some people lay on Yud Dalet, it can cause Laisa Skaidudu. So it's not a stira in Rashi. Rashi is explaining the kasha in different terms at different points in the sukkah.
You have been listening to the Shiurim of Shas Illuminated. Shas Illuminated is a non-profit organization dedicated to broadening the learning of those studying the daf worldwide. If you would like to make a donation or to dedicate a daf or masechta, please visit our website at shasilluminated.org or call 203-312-SHAS. You can also email us at shasilluminated@gmail.com.